These animals showed no fear. "Don't they see us?" she said.
"Not exactly, no," Harding said. "Of course, in a literal sense, they do see us, but we don't really mean anything to them. We hardly ever take cars out at night, and so they have no experience of them. We are just a strange, smelly object in their environment, representing no threat, and therefore no interest. I've occasionally been out at night visiting a sick animal, and on my way back, these fellows block the road for an hour or more."
"What do you do?"
Harding grinned. "Play a recorded tyrannosaur roar. That gets them moving. Not that they care much about tyrannosaurs. These apatosaurs are so big, they don't really have any predators. They can break a tyrannosaur's neck with a swipe of their tail. And they know it. So does the tyrannosaur."
"But they do see us. I mean, if we were to get out of the car..."
Harding shrugged. "They probably wouldn't react. Dinosaurs have excellent visual acuity, but they have a basic amphibian visual system. It's attuned to movement. They don't see unmoving things well at all." The animals moved on, their skin glistening in the rain. Harding put the car in gear. "I think we can continue now," he said. Wu said, "I suspect you may find there are pressures on your park, just as there are pressures on Genentech's drugs." He and Hammond had moved to the living room, and they were now watching the storm lash the big glass windows.
"I can't see how," Hammond said.
"The scientists may wish to constrain you, even to stop you."
"Well, they can't do that," Hammond said. He shook his finger at Wu. "You know why the scientists would try to do that? It's because they want to do research, of course. That's all they ever want to do is research. Not to accomplish anything. Not to make any progress, just do research. Well, they have a surprise coming to them."
"I wasn't thinking of that," Wu said.
Hammond sighed.
"I'm sure it would be interesting for the scientists to do research, but you arrive at the point where these animals are simply too expensive to be used for research. This is wonderful technology, Henry, but it's also frightfully expensive technology. The fact is, it can only be supported as entertainment."
Hammond shrugged. "That's just the way it is."
"But if there are attempts to close down..."
"Face the damn facts, Henry," Hammond said irritably. "This isn't America. This isn't even Costa Rica. This is my island. I own it, and nothing is going to stop me from opening Jurassic Park to all the children of the world."
He chuckled.
"Or at least to the rich ones. And I tell you, they'll love it."
In the back seat of the Jeep, Ellie Sattler stared out the window. They had been driving through rain-drenched jungle for the last 20 minutes, and had seen nothing since the apatosaurs crossed the road.
"We're near the jungle river now," Harding said as he drove. "It's off there, somewhere to our left."
Abruptly, he slammed on the brakes again. The car skidded to a stop in front of a flock of small green animals.
"Well, you're getting quite a show tonight," he said. "Those are compies."
"Procomp sognathids," Ellie thought, wishing that Grant were here to see them. This was the animal they had seen in the fax, back in Montana. The little dark green Procomp sognathids scurried to the other side of the road, then squatted on their hind legs to look at the car, chittering briefly, before hurrying onward into the night.
"Odd," Harding said. "Wonder where they're off to. Compies don't usually move at night, you know. They climb up in a tree and wait for daylight."
"Then why are they out now?" Ellie said.
"I can't imagine. You know, compies are scavengers, like buzzards. They're attracted to a diet..."